Today is Monday, January 24th, 2011, and I'm your guest host, Adam Melhem.
I'm Claire Eagle, and this is News 101.
News 101.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
What's left of us? Just a big mistake. There's nothing more.
Good evening. It's currently 5:06 in the evening, and time for a full hour of independent volunteer-produced news.
Today, in our special post-AMS election episode of News 101, we will be joined by Election Administrator Eric McKinnon, and then we will discuss the future of the AMS with guests AMS President-elect Jeremy McElroy and VP Academic-elect Matt Parson. In the Arts Report, Adi Manouche will look at Virgin Radio's fake film festival, in which contestants must condense a film into a single minute.
All this, plus your weekly weather forecast from the UBC Storm Club, right here on News 101, your source for independent, local, national, and international news. I'm Adam Melham.
And I'm Claire Eagle. And now, it's time for your local News 101 headlines. In campus news, a UBC study recently found that regardless of the many pharmaceutical closures that are occurring throughout Ontario, there will be no negative effects on the geographical accessibility for residents, disproving a previous concern that reducing generic pricing on drugs would result in pharmacy shortages. The study analyzed the location of more than 3,300 community pharmacies and found that roughly 64% of Ontario citizens live within walking distance of their local pharmacies, while 91% live within a 5-kilometer radius. Michael Law, an assistant professor at UBC's Centre for Health Services and Policy Research and lead author of the study, believes that the effects of the closures would be, quote, quite modest, end quote. That is, if the pricing cuts, quote, led to any pharmacy closures at all, end quote. While Ontario's reduction in generic drug prices resulted in a price equivalent to 25% of equivalent brands, Law reminds us that, quote, the important thing to consider is whether we have the right to balance between drug prices and reasonable access to pharmacies. We could pay $10,000 per prescription to have a pharmacy in every corner, but I don't think that would improve the health of Canadians, end quote.
Also in campus news, a study conducted by UBC's Faculty of Forestry has found that an overwhelming growth in the Gulf Islands deer populations have left the region susceptible to invasion of foreign species. There's currently a decline in biodiversity occurring on all 18 islands that were studied due to the loss of vegetation and a loss of 50% of the birds. Peter Arcis and Tara Martin, both forestry professors here at UBC and co-authors of the study, suggest that because of changing regulations and sentiments towards deer hunting, the population has thrived and in the future may lead to a loss of even more local plant and bird species. However, Arcis is optimistic and claims, quote, we're hoping to convince the government they need to consider new management initiatives such as limited entry hunting under community supervision because failing to act in the decision to favor the black-tailed deer over many other species, end quote.
In other campus news, this year's AMS elections have given rise to a dynamic new executive team, as well as adding new and dedicated students to the Board of Governors and the Senate. In a resounding victory, Jeremy McElroy will take the reins as 102nd president of the AMS. For VP Finance, Elin Tayar will once again fill the seat in hopes of changing the downward trajectory the AMS has faced in dealing with an economic deficit. Catherine Tyson will take over as VP External, which is, of course, McElroy's current seat. Mike Soleil will move from past involvement with societies and clubs across campus to fill the position of VP Admin. And to round out the exec team, Matt Parson will take on the role as VP Academic and University Affairs. For the Board of Governors, Sumedha Sharma and Sean Heisler have been elected to speak on behalf of the student body. And finally, the open Senate seats will be filled by Justin Yang, Imran Habib, Ryan Bredin, Thomas Brennan, and Spencer Rasmussen. For more on the election, we are joined in the studio by Election Administrator Eric McKinnon. Thanks for being here with us today, Eric.
Not a problem.
So what do you have to say, I guess, about the election in general so far? I know that voter turnout is always an issue, and do you feel that that was something that improved this year?
In terms of sheer numbers, it didn't improve. I mean, last year we had about 6,700 students in total come out and vote, which is 14% of the population here, of the AMS's members. This year we had, I'd say, about 5,400. I think it was just shy of 5,400, which is about 11.5%. So there's a bit of a challenge in a couple of different places. Number one, AMS Council, when I met with them, in regards to the voting platform and how we were going to go about that after an issue that we had with UBC Enrollment Services and getting a new platform put in place in December, they asked myself and the Elections Committee to look at seeing if we can get the system put in place in 2 days, which is something that we did, which I feel fantastic about, and I think it provided a great fair election for the students, obviously, that took part in voting. The challenge there was that every student had to be emailed a login and password for the system, so it was a little bit convoluted, and every time you have a barrier to entry, such as, I mean, we all say, you know, 2 minutes, it's only 2 minutes, but for every student to go and take that extra step, and we all get 100 emails a day from UBC, et cetera. So there was a bit of a challenge there in that regard. Also, we didn't necessarily have, and while I'm sure you'll hear about this, you might even be asking me about it later from myself and some of the candidates, in that there was a lot of kind of nitty-gritty, dirty politics going on during the race. We didn't have any massive issues such as the United Nations human rights complaint that we had last year, which, you know, like it or not, did bring out a lot of students that wouldn't necessarily vote in AMS mm-hmm. politics and got them involved in that election. So I feel positive that we conducted a really fair and secure election. There's going to be no issues like we had last year with voter fraud and whatnot. And I do feel, you know, the fact that we got, you know, 11.5% turnout with such a annoyance with that email login and password as a victory.
Right. And I guess, how do you see engagement improving in the future? I mean, do you think that this year is representative of what we're always going to see, or are there ways that we can improve student engagement in politics like that?
I do feel that there's a couple of ways we could get the student body at large more engaged. One of the things we tried to do this year was we brought the base back to the first year residences, which is something that you guys came and participated mm-hmm. in and put live on the radio, which was fantastic. And the goal behind that was not just to see how many first years we can get into seats, but also to bring student politics to the students as opposed to trying to get them to come to us, right. Which in previous years past we've done in you know events at like the theater here in the sub and the conversation pit. So, you know, we're requesting students take time out of their day to come to us, whereas this year we thought, you know what, let's bring these debates to them at a time that seems really reasonable. You know, between 5 and 7, students can grab their food from the caf and then come down and witness the debates or even eat in the room and just see what student politics has to offer. We also tried to work with UBC PoliSci. Dr. Bruce Baum came in and moderated the debate that you saw, which was fantastic. You know, and he took that message. I mean, it was the first time he'd seen AMS politics, and he's a professor here and has been for a while. So he was able to take that message back to his first year, you know, Poly 100 classes and Poly 300 level classes and say, you know, hey, this is what the AMS is doing. You need to make sure you go out and vote. Like, these students aren't a joke. They come very prepared to these debates. They're very prepared for a year of representing you, not only to the administration, but also to the provincial and federal governments, you know, and they spend, you know, $15 million of your money. You may want to take the 2 minutes to look at that ballot.
You kind of touched upon this in the last question. You mentioned the gritty, dirty politics. So I guess the question on my mind and a few people's minds, do you think this will positively impact future elections? Like, it'll bring in more voters? Or will it have a detrimental effect?
I don't think we're going to see either way. I mean, a year from now is a long time, and mm-hmm. students are going to forget. You know, we're going to get 25% new voting body coming in September and 25% of the voting body leaving in mm-hmm. September. So, or maybe not that high, but you get the idea. I don't think it's going to have a huge impact. I do think that, obviously, you know, there's a lot of heat that's put on myself as the elections administrator and also on the candidate to try and conduct ourselves accordingly. And when things go south, as they did over the last few days of the election, there's a very small, loud, vocal minority that follows these things really closely. You know, voter media, bloggers, the newspaper, that doesn't encompass 15, 20, 30,000 students, right? That's a couple hundred. they're really loud and they create a lot of noise over a small period of time, and that is what I think is going to get more students involved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, you may have heard the saying, all press is good press. You know, some of this is bad press, but at the end of the day, if it helped bring more students out to read the ballot, read the bios, and vote for candidates, then I'm happy about it.
Okay.
I think it's in response to that as well. I know I was reading a UBC article, actually, that made the argument, quite an extreme argument, that maybe with these kind of politics and the fact that a lot of the, I guess, the rules didn't really seem to be in place to effectively monitor them, they said they made the argument just for, I guess, getting rid of AMS elections altogether. Mm-hmm. And while it is very extreme, I guess, do you see any changes in the way elections are going to be administered in the future? To reflect, I guess, the different issues that we had with, like, the smear campaigns and the slate accusations and so on?
Sure. Let me address this in a couple of different ways, because you weren't privy to being in the elections committee meeting as to what was decided. But what I can tell you is that the issues that came up with the current president's endorsement of candidates, which obviously was the major issue, you know, he spent an inordinate amount of money. I believe I read in the same article that it was, or in the UBC article, that it was 10,000 flyers and 7,200 peppermint patties or whatever. I mean, I'm not paying attention to any of that, really. I'm trying to focus on running a good election. But with that issue in mind, you know, we got a clarification early in December from Sheldon Goldfarb, the AMS archivist, mm-hmm. Of what the slate code means. Mm-hmm. And it means two things. And this is my interpretation as the EA. Mm-hmm. Other EAs will have different interpretations. But the spirit of it is to prevent candidates from running on a similar platform for mutual advantage. Mm-hmm. I don't think you could ask any of the candidates if they felt they were getting a mutual advantage by having just, like, absolutely getting trashed in local media because mm-hmm. Bijan was out, you know, trying to have his first year student army flyer the campus and convince people. It was less about convincing people to vote for his set of candidates than just running any set of candidates to convince people not to vote for the people he didn't want in office, one of which you're going to talk to later today. Mm-hmm. So when the elections committee met, I have the ability as the elections administrator to rule on these things. But I told the elections committee in the very beginning, I also told the candidates at the all candidates meeting, I'm not going to exercise that power. I like to rule by committee. I think there's five of us on the committee. You know, the people on the elections committee are very smart and they're very talented. They helped me pull off this election and I have a lot of faith and trust in them. So we met as a group and tried to decide where we wanted to go with this. And we wanted to make sure that this third party action is not a slate. It's an endorsement of candidates. And if we want to consider it a slate, then I made the very clear point that, you know, the newspaper ran an endorsement of candidates as well. And they printed 12,000 of those and sent them out to the campus, right? So what do we do then? Do we tell the newspaper they can't run endorsements? Or do we just say that because a lot of people don't like our incumbent president and in his actions, then we just take retaliation against the candidates that he was endorsing, which in my mind is ridiculous. Yeah. And the committee agreed with that. So what I am going to be recommending to answer your question is that we do take a look at third-party endorsements and how they affect candidates. I mean, this is just a really challenging gray area. If you decide to run for VP admin next year and I don't like you and there's a third-party endorsement rule in place, I can just print up a bunch of flyers about you and you get in trouble. Right. What did you have to do with that? Nothing. So it's going to be the job of the Legislative Procedures Committee to change the code and then future EAs to interpret the code as I did to see how they want to rule.
Right. I guess in that, what's next for the committee? I mean, do you guys get a break, or are you working with the AMS now, or do you have to like start planning for next year already?
Well, we're currently assessing any complaints and appeals that come in. Also, the kind of the paperwork that's left, you know, doing reimbursements for the candidates and that sort of thing, that all needs to be tied up. There's a few interviews of candidates we need to do just to make sure that there was no wrongdoing in some of the things that happened over the last few days of the campaign period. And then finally, after that, take a little bit of time off prior to the reading break. And then it's just purely getting focused on the upcoming referendum.
Right.
I'm sure you've heard, as well as most students have by now, or it's been leaked out anyway, is that March 7th through 11th, we are going to be having a referendum to renew the UPass as well as change some bylaws and some other things. And it's the job of AMS Elections to conduct that referendum. So that's what we'll be looking for next.
Wow, sounds like you've got some busy time ahead of you.
Oh, yeah. So, it's going to be fun.
Great. Well, thank you for coming in with us today, Eric.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And thanks for your coverage of the election.
Oh, definitely. We always enjoy doing that. So, all right. So that was Eric McKinnon, the elections administrator for the 2011 AMS elections, which just happened. So we're going to take a quick break right now, but stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Big
government and big pharma have entered into a secret conspiracy in which secret government contracts are sold to big pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so big pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out Radio Free Thinker, the radio show / podcast that promotes skepticism, critical thinking, and science education. Every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Welcome back to CITR Vancouver. So going off of this AMS elections theme, earlier today a few of our reporters canvassed the student union building to find out general opinion about the AMS elections from the students. Amidst a sea of apathy, a few thoughts did stand out.
Hello, can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Lawrence Lamb and I am in third year sciences.
Great. Have you been following this year's AMS election?
Yes, I have.
And what are your thoughts on it?
Personally, for me, it's been very difficult to be interested when there's so many controversies happening. Mm-hmm. For me personally, it seemed like it was just some sort of sick joke to get more people out and interested in the elections. And for me, it just completely lost my interest.
Really? So a bit disenfranchised by all the controversy?
Yeah, pretty much. I feel like student politics at a university shouldn't be like this at all.
Mm-hmm. Some people have called for some candidates to be disqualified or even the entire election to be nullified. Do you agree with these?
I wouldn't say that anyone should get disqualified. Elections being nullified, on the other hand, I mean, it seems like a pretty radical decision, but at the same time, I feel like this past election has been so ridiculous that it might be a plausible choice.
For their participation, I think UBC, Jeremy McElroy, who won president, and I believe Michael Wright were fined and not disqualified, even though they broke AMS rules. This has been a very controversial move that some people think their punishment wasn't harsh enough. Some people think it was too harsh. What is your opinion on this?
Well, personally, I do support both Mitch and Jerry McElroy, so I feel like, I don't know, I empathize with their situation, especially with what Bijan did to them. Uh-huh. Personally, I feel like the punishment is fair.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How do you think this whole controversy will go down in Bijan's kind of a legacy?
Council meeting on Wednesday will be very interesting. Yeah. That's all I have to say.
That's great. Thank you very much.
No worries.
Hi, can you please introduce yourself?
My name is Derek. I'm in second year in the Faculty of Arts.
Great. Did you participate in this year's AMS elections?
Yep, yes I did.
Great, and how do you feel about the outcomes?
I feel pretty good. Actually, I feel like this team's pretty strong. Looking forward to next year, see what they bring.
Yeah. You feel like the most qualified people won? There weren't any disappointments?
Yeah, I feel like the most qualified people won, actually. I think this should be a pretty strong team with J-Mac taking the lead. That should be an interesting change from Bijan.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. I liked Mike Soleil for the VP admin position. That's a good choice as well.
Great. As with a lot of the AMS elections in recent years, it's kind of been marked by voter apathy. How do you feel that in the future the AMS and student body in general can help increase voter turnout, increase participation in these elections?
I think that would have mostly to do with the way that the AMS actually conducts its business over the course of the year. Mm-hmm. Depending on what kind of media that they receive, and generally, if people are engaged with the AMS, then they're more likely to turn out for the votes. If they see that the AMS will actually have an effect in their lives, then they'll probably be more likely to vote. Also, with marketing around the elections, I think that could be stepped up a little bit. Uh-huh. But I think that the most important thing is that this year's team needs to frame itself in such a way that the university students see that there's a benefit for them being engaged.
Yeah, great. Some people I've talked to today said that all the controversy surrounding this election has kind of disenfranchised voters, that people are marginalized in AMS elections now. Do you believe that these kind of controversies might help voter turnout, like piquing interest, making it a bit more exciting, or do you think that it'll have a negative effect on people's view of the AMS and elections in general.
No, I think that that will put together a negative effect for DMS and elections in general. When elections are marred by those kinds of, like, well, why get engaged with something that you see is already being failed?
Yeah.
Right? So, no, I think that these scandals need to be stopped. The AMS needs to clear that up as soon as possible because they're losing their own, shoot, I can't remember that word, but...
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you very much for your time, Derek.
No worries. Thanks.
Hello. Can you please introduce yourself?
My name's Daniel Millard. I'm in second year science.
Great. What are your thoughts on this year's AMS election?
I think it was kind of riddled by I wouldn't say fraud, but maybe, controversy on everyone's behalf. And then the issues were kind of avoided in general.
Yeah.
It focused more on the controversy than the issues itself.
Yeah, I think the controversy kind of overshadowed the more important things happening in the election.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Some people have said that some candidates should be disqualified for the controversies happening, and some have gone as far to say that the entire election should be nullified. Do you agree with this?
No, I don't think so. I don't think, if you're referring to the slating by Mitch Wright and McElroy, I don't think that was too ridiculous. I wouldn't call that a slating, but I think it was a fine election, just not very productive. So I think it should count, yeah.
Do you think their punishments were fair, just being fined and that was it?
I think I didn't realize they were fined, but okay. I wouldn't do any more than that for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Great. Like past AMS elections, this one's kind of been marred by a very low voter turnout and general apathy from the student body. Do you have any ideas on how this could be improved in the future, what the AMS can do to help interest more people in AMS elections?
Yeah, I think just a better debate format would be better. I know there were a few debates, but I don't know. Maybe it's just the lack of or the apathy over the issues in UBC at large, and there were just no real dominant issues that separated the student body, which would be more productive.
What issues would you like to be covered in the future that you think were ignored this year?
The student housing is always a big one. I couldn't say in specific. None of the issues really grasp me, but I don't know what it is. Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Are you happy with the way the selection turned out? Do you think we have a strong team for the coming year?
I didn't vote for any of the candidates that got in, so I was kind of disappointed, especially represented on the left. There are a bunch of candidates that I would like to get in, but especially the ones endorsed by the Social Justice Center.
Yeah.
But they didn't, so that's too bad. But yeah.
Okay, well, great. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, once again, I am your guest host, Adam Melhem, and you are hearing us live on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver or online at citr.ca, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at our beloved UBC. It's currently 5:28 and time for the weekly weather forecast brought to you by our very own UBC Storm Club.
Thanks, Adam. Well, it's nice to know that today's downpour will be ending this evening, and we may even see some sun later in the week. Daytime temperatures will remain mild, with the average high being around 9 degrees. Here's your UBC forecast. For tonight, cloudy with rain ending this evening, low of 6 degrees overnight. For tomorrow, 70% chance of showers in the morning and 30% chance in the evening, afternoon. High of 8, low of 6 degrees. On Wednesday, cloudy with 60% chance of rain, high of 10 degrees, low of 4. For Thursday, cloudy with sunny periods, high of 9, low of 5 degrees. For Friday, cloudy with 70% chance of rain, high of 10, low of 5. On Saturday, mix of sun and cloud, high of 11 degrees, low of 5. And finally for Sunday, mix in sun of clouds again, with a high of 11 and a low of 4 degrees. Currently it is 70 degrees and partly cloudy at YVR. The normal temperatures for this time of year are a maximum of 7 degrees and a low of 1. That's your weather this week, brought to you by the UBC Storm Club. For News 101, I'm Daniel Casanova.
Thanks as always for that, Daniel. And we'd like to take this time to inform our listeners that Megan Turcotta will no longer be bringing us her weekly City Hall updates. So we'd really like to thank Megan for all the great work she has done for News 101. And in the future, we hope to be bringing you weekly AMS Council coverage starting soon. So we're just going to take a quick break right now, but do stay with us. Following this break, we're going to have two of the new members of the recently elected AMS Executive Council in the studio live with us, so stay tuned. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
Radio audience.
We're investing industrial noise and goth. Tune into the Vampire's Ball. Midnight, 4 a.m. Friday nights, right here at 101.9 CITR FM in Vancouver, www.citr.ca.
I'm troubled by shapeless fears. Who can live in the modern world without catching his share of them? I hope I've landed on my feet this time.
Need a place to rent? Have a place for rent? AMS Rents Line can help. AMS Rents Line is an easy-to-operate, touch-tone, and web-based system that connects thousands of landlords with UBC students looking for off-campus housing. UBC students can search the ads for free or place a two-week posting for $5. To view current listings, visit www.amsrentsline.com.
And welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to News 101, broadcasted live from the Student Union Building at the University of British Columbia. I'm Claire Eagle, and it's time for your News 101 Arts Report. For that, we go to Adam Yanush, who will be telling us about the Virgin Fake Film Festival here in Vancouver.
A group of young filmmakers have just wrapped up two furious days shooting a one-minute version of The 40-Year-Old Virgin, hoping to win $10,000 in Virgin Radio's Fake Film Festival. I spoke to director and lead virgin Inder Nirwan about filming a one-minute movie, and he reveals the special effects involved in doing that chest-waxing scene.
Why did you want to do this film contest?
Well, I mean, any kind of challenge to budding filmmakers is always pretty appealing. So when there is a cash prize involved, obviously you want to take part.
Right? There's motivation right there.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, we always do this kind of thing anyways. My friends and I have a bit of a clique that we just get together and make short films. Mm-hmm. And this was right up our alley, so mm-hmm. we figured why not.
And you went with 40-Year-Old Virgin. How does that film lend itself well to a one-minute format?
Well, what's most appealing about doing a film like The 40-Year-Old Virgin is that all of the setups and all of the locations and everything are all relatively simple. Mm. And even the action and the blocking within the scenes are pretty simple to do. So.
But with that said, when you're filming a one-minute movie, you're flying around a lot, aren't you, just to get like half a second or a second of
absolutely.
Shooting?
Yeah, I mean, a one-second shot that's in its own unique location took at least 45 minutes of getting to that location, setting it up, lighting it, and then shooting it for hit record for 1 second, do your thing, break it all down, break all the lights out, get out of there before anyone realized you were there kind of thing.
And then drive to the next set.
And then drive to the next set, exactly.
And how long did it take? It took 2 days to do the whole
thing? Yeah, it took us 2 days to do the whole thing. Includes, you know, having to go and pick up our other actors, mm-hmm. picking up all the equipment, and like I said, you got to get to the location, set it all up, and do all that thing. So,
mm-hmm. and you even were able to shoot inside a real feature shop. How
yes.
did you score that?
One thing that I was really hard pressed on was finding authentic locations. So, in the story, Andy, the main character, works at an electronics store, so I wanted a real electronics store. We were calling around everywhere, and everyone just kept saying no. But with Future Shop specifically, the way they would do it was they would just say, talk to the person in the next line of chain of command, like whoever's higher up. Mm-hmm. So we just kept doing that. We just kept calling, you know, the managers and the managers.
Right. So they kept sort of putting it off, like, talk to my boss.
Yeah,
talk to my boss. And finally,
we talked to the biggest boss we could. and he said, yeah. And then we were able to shoot at a local future shop. And it was great. Everybody there was really accommodating. And it was a lot of fun.
Good stuff. Now, there's a scene in the movie, both movies, where the main character gets his chest waxed. How was that? Because you played the main character.
Yeah, I played the main character. You know, right off the bat when we decided to do the movie, that scene, it jumped out to us. We're like, we have to have the chest waxing scene in the movie because it's such an iconic piece of the movie. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. So originally, you know, first of all, to get things straight, we didn't actually wax my chest.
Oh.
No. Sorry to disappoint all our fans. I'm kind of regretful for saying that because if you go to our page on the Virgin Radio site, there's a lot of people commenting about the chest waxing. Like, oh, what did you, like, you know. How'd you survive that? That must have hurt. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, sure.
So what kind of, was it special effects? Was it tetanus injury? Or what?
It was literally just trickery, right? It's just what I did was we shaved the patches on my chest
in the shape of
what it was, and then we just took the waxing strip and just put it on the bare skin part, and then her arm covers it in such a way so that you wouldn't see that it's already waxed, and then she rips it so fast that it looks like it just got waxed, and then we cut away from it so quickly.
Okay.
It all happened so fast that it's more just, you know. It's the imagery that makes you think it really happened, and that's just filmmaking in general, right? You're always pulling tricks on your audience.
That's what sets the pros apart from the amateurs. The amateurs are actually ripping their chest hair off.
No, actually, it's the opposite because we're the amateurs and we didn't do it. Steve Carell in the real movie actually.
Is that right?
Yeah, they really did the thing. And I was saying if it had to come down to me waxing my chest, I would have done it, no problem. But there was a solution because it happened so quickly. You know, it wasn't a full scene of getting waxed because eventually you would figure out it was fake.
Yeah.
Because then you got to do it for real. But if it was just one quick shot for like half a second,
okay.
I figured why go through the pain?
All right. Well, I've seen it and I definitely laughed. It's almost more funny in sort of a tour of the film in 1 minute. Mm-hmm. You know, and how can people see it?
Well, the easiest way would actually if you just Google it. If you go to Google and type in 40-year-old Virgin in 60 seconds, it would be the first link that pops up. It goes straight to our page on the Virgin Radio site. Mm-hmm. If you want to know more about the contest, you can hit up virginradio.ca and just check out their fake film festival. There's a lot of other really great films out there. The great thing about this contest is that it's bringing a lot of Vancouver's hidden talent out of the woodworks. There's a lot of interesting filmmakers. There's a lot of interesting approaches to some of these films. People are doing stop animation, Lego animation.
Wow.
Some people are using puppets. Some people are doing spoofs. And some people are putting in full production quality. Like there's a couple of them are actually made by full-on production houses.
Wow.
So they're really, really high quality, really fun to watch. They, you know, they went no holds barred on this. So it's a lot of fun stuff to watch, but make sure you check out ours for sure, the 40-year-old Virgin in 60 seconds, and you're just register and vote for the ones you like.
So that was Adam Yanush discussing the Virgin Fake Film Festival on Now in Vancouver. I'm Claire Eagle. I'm in the studio with Adam Melham. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. So we would now like to welcome our special guests into the studio. We're joined today by the newly elected AMS president, Jeremy McElroy, and the VP Academic, Matt Parson, and VP Finance, Ellen Tayar. So it's great to have you guys in the studio today. Thank you for coming down. So I guess just general thoughts on the election process. How did you find, I guess, the process, I guess the marketing, the different controversies that went on? What were your feelings on how the season went? Jeremy, you want to start us off?
It was definitely an interesting year. Running for VPX last year was definitely a different experience. I had a much larger team with me. The field was a little bit fair, if I may make the assertion there. And mainly because we had that week to prepare the campaign last year, it was a much more condensed election period this year. It's definitely a lot more hectic. The rules weren't necessarily as laid out at the beginning as we would have liked. It was a much more difficult campaign than last year.
All right. Ellen, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think definitely a learning experience. We did learn, I think we need to, you know, make new rules and clarify all the rules for elections to make everything fair. Just a few loopholes here and there that we learned about, so it was good. But definitely a challenging experience, and I think the last two or three days turned pretty ugly, but it's done now, I guess.
And Matt, this is your first year running for the AMS, right?
That's correct.
So,
yeah.
So how'd you find the process?
Interesting, to say the least. It was very all-encompassing. I didn't expect it to just completely take over my life, but you know, such as campaigning, I've heard. The actual election system, I was a little disappointed with, actually, just how there was the delay with the emails coming out. It was somewhat discontinuous in the sense that you had to check your emails. Some of them went to your junk mail. You hop from this site to the other. But, I mean, in the end, we you know, got a decent comparatively turnout. So I guess no harm done. So
yeah, and I think we just actually had the elections administrator, Eric McKinnon, in here to chat about that process. And I think he expressed some dissatisfaction with it as well. But in terms of turnout, how do you see that improving in the future? I mean, is there a way that we can improve student engagement, or?
I guess I'll talk about that. This year, as VP External, I spent a lot of time on other campuses talking to other student unions, and really you find that at the absolute sort of best campuses, regardless of size, you know, 20% is sort of the peak. University of Calgary got 20% turnout last election there, about 24,000 students. Everyone else is definitely between sort of the 10 to 16, 17% range. So we fall, we're the largest student union in Canada in terms of like eligible voters in a single election. A lot of people don't realize that. So getting 5,000 people even out to vote for one thing is pretty remarkable. A lot of people focus on the 11% and it's a small number, but in terms of actual people, like 5,500 people voted in this election. That's an astronomical number, especially when, you know, it's not a provincial or federal election.
Right. Okay. Any thoughts from you too?
Yeah, no, I think the big challenge this year was the new system that we were trying out. Obviously, with the problems that we had last year, we had to go try a different route, and you know, it was more complicated than we were hoping. But I think the elections committee did a great job in bringing out. I was actually surprised that 5,000 people actually voted. We were expecting a lot less.
That's okay.
So now that you guys have won, and I know it's only the preliminary stages, but I know there's some thought for the next year. And specifically, Ellen, with you taking over, like taking the reins of your own job from this year into next year, how do you find the books now, and how do you plan on changing your tactics or keeping them the same?
This is for my portfolio, VP Finance.
Yes, yes.
We started with a massive deficit, with the worst, one of the worst financial years we've ever seen, and essentially no light at the end of the tunnel. And we've come a long way. We presented the first balanced budget this year. Obviously, with the economic situation, our businesses weren't doing too good. But the next part of the fix is the referendum coming up. We're all excited about that. It's going to be a lot of work. If that passes, our future is secure forever. It's a permanent fix, and I'll be really proud of what we've done in the last 2 years, essentially, a long way from where we started. So that's the next step. And then after that, if it passes, there's a lot of new funding that we'll get, that will new programs, new services that we're very excited to start this coming September, clubs benefit funds and whatnot. So focusing on that and structuring those funds is the next step afterwards. If the referendum doesn't go through, which I don't think will be the case, but then we'll have another problem to address, which will be addressing the current fiscal situation and kind of finding a long-term fix for that. So it's quite different from my last year in office.
Kind of going off of what your plans are for the next year, I know a big critique of the AMS is lack of student involvement via communication, planning, events. What are your thoughts, for all three of you really, what are your thoughts on this, and how do you plan on changing it, if you were to change it at all? Starting with Jeremy, I guess.
The AMS is in its 95th year, and it's in its 95th year of trying to reach out to students. Sorry. You know, it's every year they talk about engagement, you talk about everything, but really, how many people pay attention to provincial or federal politics? You know, sort of remove the the grandiose sort of idea of that kind of political environment, and students just lose interest. We know that students are engaged and they are paying attention. I mean, the UBC wouldn't be selling nearly as many ads if they weren't. As well, you know, we wouldn't have the 20,000 students showing up at the UPass referendum. The problem is that they don't necessarily see their role in the student government side. So that's really what we need to do. You know, we have fantastic events. You know, AMS Events and CITR co-host a lot of really great things throughout the year, like Block Party and Welcome Back Barbecue haven't done quite as well as we would have liked them to, but there's definitely still a large following of students for these kinds of events. So I don't necessarily think that we're doing any better or worse than other campuses across Canada, but there is that issue. And my competitor, Mike Moll, you know, wanted to bring in sort of mobile app and, you know, sort of increase communications, and, you know, I couldn't agree more. Those are all things that we are definitely looking into this year, working with our health plan provider to create a mobile app, which the AMS will be able to use, and you know, a few other things coming down the line, but we'll definitely be much better at getting the word out. The mechanisms have been there, they just haven't been used.
Perfect. Ellen, Matt, do you guys have any thoughts on this?
Sure. I think one of the problems is that when we're looking at engagement, we look at election numbers. I mean, do you gauge how well Canada is doing as a nation by our you know, voter turnout? We have 360 clubs, active clubs, you know, over 10,000 students involved in those clubs. That's AMS. You know, we provide funding for CITR. That's AMS. We have a multitude of services. That's AMS. We do a lot of lobbying. Just because students don't come to council meetings, and you can't expect them to. Everyone's busy these days. Like,
I don't want to go to council meetings.
So I think AMS is effective. We do provide these services, and students definitely use them. We do a lot of lobbying and just generally everything to do with student life. We represent students in every aspect with the university government and all of that. So it is, I think, misleading to look at voter turnout to gauge that engagement. So that's just one thing to keep in mind, but definitely increase communication and simplifying our complex organization is a way towards that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you guys. How about Matt?
Yeah, Jeremy and Ellen really touched on really all the main points. It's just a matter of using the communication lines that we have and providing it in a medium that students can really, you know, look forward to reading, hopefully. Yeah,
I think it definitely seems like it's almost awareness more than anything that students need about what the AMS does. I guess breaking down those barriers, like you said, and definitely using a lot of new medias. I think the app is a good idea, and I think in keeping with that, I think all three of you seem to be very active, and I guess you have to be during campaign season with, like, blogs, Twitter, all those different medias, and I guess something that our listeners will want to hear about are the different controversies that did happen. I guess, first of all, like, Bijan Akhmadian's endorsement of certain candidates and reaction to that. I mean, I know some of you were endorsed and some of you definitely weren't here, and I guess how do you react to that? How do you react when you're being endorsed or taken down by a third party and you have no control over like what they're saying or what to do from that? Matt?
Well, it was kind of surprising. I mean, I wasn't necessarily expecting it, and as far as I know that a lot of the controversy around it was, is there slate-like behavior, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, you have all the positions filled with his suggestions, but really it's out of your control what you can do as far as a third party endorsing you or disendorsing you. But I do think that there should be censorship, I think, should be looked into, whether it actually happens or if it doesn't. I mean, that's not really up to me, but when it's slanderous, then that's really not. It doesn't look good on the AMS's point of view, mm-hmm. From students, because, you know, they might lose faith in the politics of the students that are running this organization. So it's tough to say as far as everything that went down. I guess you know, it's out of your control, and there's not much that you can do. But whether you step in, have the elections administrator, and stop it, that's another question, I guess.
Great. And Ellen, Jeremy.
Sure. If I can add to that, I think one of the criticism for not having that transparency and the media relations and whatnot was a problem this year. We had that, the spokesperson for the society decided not to let others speak for the society. So other executives had a hard time being as transparent and, you know, keeping the relations with the greater campus. And as far as the endorsements go, I think it definitely spoke to the internal dynamics this whole past year of how we functioned as an executive. We accomplished a lot, but there were definitely problems, and it just came up during election time. Yeah. So.
Do you have anything?
I know I'm kind of the elephant in the room here. Previous elections administrators have had a zero tolerance policy, essentially, for these kinds of things. Serena Rahal 2 years ago disqualified Blake for slight-like behaviors, like outright disqualified him, ended up appealing and getting back into the race. But even last year, Isabel Ferraris, like she wasn't afraid to put in sort of you can't campaign for the next 48 hours. You know, she was very strict on these different things, and they made it explicit: you are responsible for other people's endorsements. So all emails out to chains have to be CC'd to the elections administrator. Any posters that go up count against your poster count. Like, they would factor this in, and a lot of people got a lot of fines for these kinds of things. And this year's elections committee wasn't willing to step in here. Part of it is that a lot of that has been elections administrator discretion in the past, or that it hasn't been formally laid out in our code. This year, they decided that they weren't going to push on that, and Bijan capitalized on that by spending exorbitant amounts of money on this particular campaign, essentially for a personal vendetta against myself. I'd like to believe that we got along on a professional level throughout the year, but then this sort of came out for me. It was very left field. He had expressed his support for my candidacy in this race originally, I was thrown off guard. I'm a pacifist. Like, I'm a big hippie vegetarian. Like, I don't normally do things, but my blood boiled. I made a mistake of jumping on an opportunity that presented itself. I think the UBC blog, I did provide some content there for things that I feel weren't getting out to students about the man making accusations about myself. I feel like crap for having done that. I laid it out in my apology and in the UBC article, but there were no other options. The elections committee wasn't doing anything. Nobody was speaking out against this. They were just kind of letting it happen, and, there's slander on the internet. So I felt that was my only thing that I could do to sort of try and regain some legitimacy.
And I know some student... We went out and spoke with students today. I know some student reaction. They think that with the AMS elections, it was petty, in a sense. And that, in a way, that kind of tarnishes the AMS name, the presidential name, the executive name. So to our listeners right now, are you going to kind of wash over this situation, or are you going to do any sort of means to show that the exec is not petty? It's legitimate. You take pride in the office. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I take exceptional pride in the office, and that's why I feel particularly bad about having been involved with that. It was just sort of an unfortunate, a lot of people are calling it sort of Bijan syndrome, whereas, he got involved and suddenly everyone started playing his game, and I feel terrible about that, but I'm heartened by the support and quite humbled by it since the outpouring. People saying, thank you for the apology, we really respect you having come forward, and that's definitely sort of... That is more of a sign of the year to come than, my actions. And I promise you that I'm really excited to work with this executive. We take a great deal of pride in our work. We've already accomplished a lot of really great things. The problem is we weren't able to tell anyone about it. We will definitely be doing a much better job of reaching out to students in a much more positive light.
Right. It definitely seems like a strong team and a lot of communication going on. And I think even earlier we were looking at the blog and we saw the endorsements they put of each candidate. And I think myself especially was very touched by it. I think it's a very open, kind gesture. So I guess one final question, so we don't run over time here, but I guess what are your hopes for the year as a whole? And from your competitors' platforms, were there any ideas that stuck out to you and things that you want to incorporate into what you do and do as a council this year?
Yeah.
For myself, I've been warned that the VP academic portfolio is quite extensive, and it is just the amount of committees that you sit on could eat away your whole week. So I've been warned to, or you know, suggested to take on three large projects, and it seems that I've somewhat of inherited two that are fairly large in the form of governance and the land use plan. So that takes out quite a large chunk of time, and that leaves me with room around there to hopefully accomplish quite a lot in the academic side. And I have an unbelievable amount of respect for Justin Yang and all of his accomplishments. And I think that there is a lot of merit in some of the things that he wanted to accomplish. And I plan on talking to him about how he wants to go accomplish that, especially increasing amount of undergraduate research. I think that is something that's worthwhile, and if UBC is to remain up there within the top 40 universities in the world, it should be definitely increasing the amount of opportunities and funding towards that area.
Great, thanks. Ellen?
So there isn't a lack of work in my portfolio. Obviously, there's massive amount of work to be done, just fixing the deficit with the referendum and whatnot. I'm going to be focusing mainly on fixing our system, our organization, and putting a lot of a greater emphasis on sustainability, as we did this past year. So those are going to be my main focuses, the financial and the sustainability part. I know, big criticism has been the communication and, being transparent to students, but you have to prioritize, and unless we're willing to hire someone to do that on my behalf, I won't have the time to, because I know I'm going to be busy fixing our problems.
The big thing that Michael Moll really put out in the entire campaign was engagement, mm-hmm. about bringing students in, and he's since come forward and said he has every indication of still being involved in the referendum process. He really feels strongly about helping the AMS fix its structural and bylaw problems. Additionally, the whole drafting a strategy for that engagement. I love my blog. A good friend of mine helped develop it, and so I'm going to be holding on to that. And we're definitely going to be utilizing all social media mechanisms to try and just get the information out to students. Students are passive, so they're not necessarily engaged, but they can be aware, and that's the really big thing that we need to capitalize on this year. And so that's the big thing that I'll be taking from my competitor and definitely running with is that awareness on campus.
Perfect. Well, great. Thanks so much to all of you for coming in today. It's been great having you here, and best of luck in your upcoming terms. We're very excited to see what you do.
Sure. Thank
you.
Thanks, Claire.
So you just heard us live in office with Matt Parson, the VP Academic, Ellen Tayar, VP Finance, and Jeremy McElroy, the new AMS President. So thank you very much to them for being in office with us right now. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. And that's our program for January 24th, 2011. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. Also, if you'd like to share your comments, get involved with the show, give us a hot news tip, please contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email us at news@citr.ca. We are currently looking for intrepid reporters to join our news team, so please do contact us if you're interested. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter with the username CITRNews. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to past shows at citr.ca. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Claire Eagle, and it's been a pleasure being here today.
And I'm Adam Mellon. The show is produced entirely by Iqbal Ahmed, with headlines written by Jess Landy. From the entire news team here at CITR, thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned now for Career Fast Track at 6 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Thank you.